This is the Kate and Colby Show Garage Sessions, special episodes we record for you, our pod fam. Join us as we return to our roots with just two mics, two co-hosts, and one desire to talk about things that matter. Can we take it back to 95 before we had this drama in our lives? Just staring at the screen every day and night. I miss the rush of living in real life. Go get your DeLorean.
Good?
We're on air.
All right.
We're not in the air.
Are we on air?
We're on a kind of air.
You're on air currently.
Oh my gosh.
Do you live in constant state of, because I will even after just having a conversation with you or anyone close to me, even that kind of using my voice, I will spend days, weeks, years kind of having this stomach churning, cringing feeling over things I said, you know, or how I said them. So I can only imagine. And then, you know, that's ramped up if it's a recording that we do like this.
Yeah.
Oh my God, there's so many nights that I don't sleep after we record an episode. And then after an episode is published, then like another ramping up of that. And then like if I do a public speaking event or speak at Sojourn, it's a whole other next level. Mm-hmm. You just...
Yeah, let's tell the pod fam what we're talking about here.
Are you just hurting? I mean, you don't struggle with that as much as I do, so maybe... So that I think that's why I'm curious, because I just say something and I will like spin out on it forever. You tend to not be that way.
All right, so to catch the pod fam up on what we're
really
referencing
here... I'm really curious if you're just cringing.
We're recording this on Tuesday, March 29th, and on Thursday, March 24th, my episode went on the air. And by episode, I mean the one time that I went up to Los Angeles
five months straight
to be on Jay Leno's new game show. You Bet Your Life is the name of the game show.
Which is a redo of a really old game show,
Groucho Marx game show. And Jay Leno with his buddy Kevin Eubanks, they host this game show. And a friend of ours suggested my name to the casting department. And so months ago, I had a Zoom interview with one of the casting agents.
Which was a fun process.
A super fun process.
You love all behind the scenes. You're obsessed with BTS.
Like, love it.
Yeah. You're always, whenever we watch a show, especially if it's reality television, but any show, you're always like... dying to know. Yeah. You'll voice out loud constantly. I wonder how they did that. And I bet you it's like
always
this.
Imagining what's happening behind the scenes.
And or you'll like look it up and see if you can find any articles written about how they do it.
Yes.
The process. You love
that stuff.
So being part of it was just magical for you.
The prospect of being on the show was, you know, cool and fine enough to be able to be on a game show and maybe win some stuff. That was fun. But just as much, like you're saying, if not more so, it was to actually go be a part of making the sausage. Mm-hmm. That part was even more intriguing to me.
Yeah, you live for that.
So I do this this interview with this casting agent, and it's just me and him. And, you know, PodFam, you might... Well, you know, because we have we had the Kate and Colby show live for a while, and many of you watched that. And so you know that in our garage, like, we have a studio set up with a really nice fancy camera and fancy lighting and fancy, just fancy.
You are fancy.
Yeah.
So everything we do is
so fancy. And so I know when I'm getting ready to set up this Zoom interview with this casting agent, I know that I'm going to have a bit of a leg up because I'm just going to boom, come on his screen instantly looking and sounding better than probably 97% of the people that this guy has been setting up these casting. Like, so I already know, like, I'm, you know, instantly just going to make an impression. Mm-hmm. But that's not enough for me to just make that much more. I have to like ramp it up even more. So do you remember that back in our other studio?
Oh my God, I didn't until you said that sentence.
Back in our other studio, I had like a computer monitor as part of our backdrop.
Oh my God.
And so like when we would do our live shows or when I would do my weekly show, The Altar, I would have like an image or something on this computer monitor. So I went and got this image of Jay
second time.
Jay Leno, like, mm-hmm. you bet your life, yep. screen sure image, and put that on the computer image behind me so that not only did I look really fancy when I popped on the Zoom meeting, but there was a not so subtle message.
There was no way you were not getting on the show. This is what like, we're saying. They loved you.
Yeah. So, but I had like my earpiece in, like when we do the live shows or when I, you mm-hmm. know, I got that in-ear monitor. And one of the first things the guy says is, oh, it looks really good. You got like a nice setup there. I'm like, oh, thank you. And then he's like, is that Jay Leno behind you and behind your shoulder? Well, yes, it is. And then he's like, can you get rid of your earpiece? But that's like how I hear myself and how I hear him. So then I was like thrown off. I'm like, oh shoot. Yeah. Give me a second to like reroute the audio so that I can hear you just through. So I was like thrown off a little bit because I couldn't have my safety of like hearing in my inner monitors. But he was, you know, this guy, I imagine did dozens of these a day. Mm-hmm. So how long was that process? Maybe 10 minutes or so. And he's asking questions and trying to get a feel for if I would be a good contestant for this show. Trying to get stories out of me. Cause there was like a pre-show interview, just an email, you know, answering questions. I don't remember all the questions he asked. I know that he wanted to know about my vocation as a progressive Christian pastor. That was interesting to him. Wanted to know a little bit about the time I got fired and what I got fired for in Arizona. Wanted to know about my cocktail obsession and making cocktails. At one point he asked, like, what's your most embarrassing story? Which just freezes me. Every time that question.
Yeah, no Enneagram 3 should ever be asked that question.
I really should take time in my life to just sit down and like write out.
Now you have a great one.
Now I have one. But up until this moment, nothing embarrassing has ever happened to me is the point here. 38 years of never being embarrassed. That's not true.
But it kind of is, like, because you're not the only sweet Enneagram 3 type in my life. And y'all work overtime. You work so hard to avoid embarrassment.
Yeah, that's what
it is. It's really hard to find an embarrassing story because your entire being is aimed at not being embarrassed. Mm-hmm. So it's funny. You put so much effort, which, to come back to the question I originally asked you, it's that, because I feel so cringy all the time because I don't know another way to, stupid ass cat.
Gilbert has entered the garage.
We've talked before about how our cat opens doors. Our cat just opens the door to the studio. I don't know. I don't know another way to put this, but I'm a bleh personality. Like, talk first, think later. Think later is one way to say it. And just a very like hard on my sleeve and also just fast paced and scattered person. Therefore, I live a lot of my life, but I'm also an image projector like you. So like, I care what people think. So I'm kind of this weird contradiction of don't really put a lot of effort into how I'm going to be perceived, but then really care about how I'm going to be perceived. So therefore I live my life in a lot of cringe is the point. And then there's you where you care a lot, but you also put a lot of effort into it. So I think that you probably don't live a lot of your life in cringe mode because of that.
Not as much. I work really hard to avoid the cringe.
Yes. So I guess that kind of answers my question. But point is, you went up there. One of the most fascinating things about how this process worked is, so I actually had to skip a Glenn Hansard concert that I was going to go to that I'd had planned for a while excited about, which I'm only sharing because that was a fascinating behind the scenes is once they tell you you're going to be on the show, they don't give you details.
What was it, 24 hours later?
The notice you had of figuring it out with how we were going to make it happen to go up there was less than 24 hours. Yeah. They called you and like, we need you in LA at this time.
You've been chosen. Like, congratulations. Can you be here tomorrow by 1 p.m. or actually it was early morning.
Stay
the night in a hotel.
Yeah. Kids stuff and school schedules. And I'd cancel my concert and give somebody else my ticket. And
I had to figure out how to get a negative COVID test, right? Cause just being vaccinated wasn't enough. I had to like show a negative test. So I had to like figure out the rapid timing,
all that. It was crazy, but it was fun. And then you came back and you were just dying. You had all these stories to tell.
Oh my gosh.
Some of them were embarrassing, which is fun because you never are embarrassed.
I now have embarrassing.
Now you have cringe stories.
Yeah. So that
just a heads up to my sweet husband, who cares? I'm trying to love you right now.
Oh.
I just got a text from my grocery shopper that she's going to be here any second.
Okay.
That will alert. Someone will be driving up. There'll be noise right outside where we're recording.
Dog barking.
And Belle might bark. I just wanted to give you a heads up.
And is it refrigerated items? Do we need to pause this to go take them in the house?
That's true. I could, yeah, that's true. I might have to do that.
That's good. This is good. This is like our opening bit where we talk about You Bet Your Life. We'll get the groceries and then we'll get into the meat of the...
Okay, but tell me, how are you feeling right now? Because... So then there was months and that would kill me. So it's bad enough for me to like feel cringy. Like say we record an episode and I feel the cringe and I like have that experience.
When did I go
then when
to
it
record?
Goes published, it's pretty quick after that. But there was a long turnaround. It was like months of, I mean, we've moved to a different house since yes, then.
Like, that's true.
A lot has happened.
I'm going to search my phone for Los Angeles.
I think it's okay to not be accurate, babe. You're so funny. You're like, I need the exact date to share with everyone. You're like full on stopping to look on your phone.
Well, because I thought you were going to keep talking. So I thought I'd have a minute to...
Sharing the very quick thought that it's been a long turnaround. So how are you feeling?
Yes.
So I don't care about the exact date. I want to know how you're feeling.
Sorry. I'm still catching the pod fam up on where we're at.
I know, but they don't need a lot of details.
Oh,
what more do you need to share?
Just this. I'm almost done.
Oh.
We're almost at the end.
Okay.
Just that the episode aired on Thursday, March 24th, but on a rather obscure channel for us here in San Diego.
KUSI,
which you can only get if you have like an over-the-air antenna.
Real quick, fun fact, we used to have a KUSI van.
Sojourn started its life as owning a KUSI van, which I didn't know at the time, and I didn't know actually till recently, that KUSI is kind of like way far right, like... Right of Fox News Network.
Oh my God, that is hilarious.
Hilarious, right?
Yeah. Sojourn drove that around for a while.
It's like we drove an InfoWars van around pretty much.
Oh my God, are you serious?
It's
yes. Really funny.
So it aired on KUSI down here in San Diego, and we don't have that channel. You can't watch it online. You have to have an antenna or like a Cox cable network. We didn't have that. So we haven't actually seen it yet. Mm-mm. But they take their episodes and a couple days later, they post them to their YouTube channel. So we just found out today that as of this Friday, which will be April 1st, it's going to be on their YouTube. So we'll finally be able to watch the episode on Friday.
But they did put a clip on their Instagram and it's just the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. So next episode, we'll share a bit more about how, because I remember a few things that I came home and told you about, but who knows what they kept, right? So they might have edited it.
Well, we know one thing they kept.
Yeah.
You telling everybody about your soft pee.
Oh my God. People, there's this whole, okay, so.
We'll get into maybe more of it
next episode. But to answer your question, how am I feeling? I don't have any feels around it because in my mind, it's not real yet. Like, I know that it aired.
Oh, but that is also different about
it. I don't have, like, any sense that it's real. Like, because in my mind, it's an obscure show that hardly anybody watches. So nobody's going to actually connect it to me. The only time it's going to become real is when it hits YouTube. And then I can share it. And then people that we actually know will have watched it.
Weird. That is not how I would feel if I were you. I didn't mean to call you weird. It's just weird how differently we see that. You know that that's not actually like factual, that it is real and people have watched it.
People have watched it.
You even had a friend text you that they watched it.
Yeah.
You're funny.
But like, I don't even know. I'm trying to think, even if someone did watch it, is there any way to connect it to me? Like, I don't know that they put our names on the screen. I don't know if they say our full names.
What do you mean any way to connect it to you?
Like, say I'm... Jacob,
oh, like strangers?
In Iowa. Mm. I'm scrolling, and I'm flipping through the channels, and here's You Bet Your Life, and this person named Colby, progressive pastor, comes on the screen. Like, I don't know that they know anything more than that. So,
this is fascinating, and this to you matters to how you feel about it.
Yeah, because why would I have any feels when it's not even real? Like, it's not really connected to me.
You can say it's not even real all you want. It does not make it true. It is real. I'm not sure what you mean when you say it's not even real.
Like, it doesn't have any impact in my life.
I am truly dying right now. I have no idea what's happening, you guys. It's not real. We spent all that time talking about details of days and dates and things about something that it's not real, guys. It's not real.
So you don't know what I mean by like having a thing that doesn't really have any touch point or connection to your life. So therefore,
no, it doesn't especially feel not real, when that so thing is you having done something and it's out there on TV. Nope. Don't.
Like the only way that I know that my books are real, for instance, is like when people.
Whoa, even your books? Okay, this is like fascinating. Like when people
email or message or talk to me in real life, like, and have some sort of.
That makes your books real?
Yes, that makes the books real. It's the classic if a tree falls in the forest and nobody's around. Like the tree of You Bet Your Life has fallen in the forest, but nobody.
The forest is
but full I have of not,
people.
I have not
lots
heard.
And lots of people.
I am not
all
around.
The people are in the forest.
I am not around that tree. This is really interesting. How,
I don't know.
Not what's how different you and I are. Right that is about now. As typical as it gets around here on the Kate and Colby
I can't
show.
Even like, yeah, but usually with our differences, I can at least find a way to have a touch point of, oh, I see what you're saying. But this one, I literally am just looking at you like, what in the actual F are you saying? Oh,
I'm dying to know.
Real. Like, my TV show is not real.
I'm dying
it's
to
not
know.
Real, guys.
I really want to
no
know.
People in the forest.
Who's, I really want to know whose team are you. I wish this was live so we could have some, like,
confident which one that everyone's on my team.
You are?
Not oh really. Lord. I say that very tongue-in-cheek. I'm sure that
you
other
won,
people
like,
are listening
every time
to you
we
understand.
Played that game, so I guess the odds are in
yeah, you're
your
a
favor.
More unique person than I am.
I didn't realize that, though. Well.
You didn't?
I guess I did.
Seriously?
No, I didn't. As soon as I said it, I didn't believe it.
Because I did.
What was the thing last hilarious. Night where we also noticed the difference, and I think it somewhat surprised us, or were we just joking about being surprised? Remember last night we were sitting at that, the writer's round musical thing.
Can we talk about the writer's round for a minute?
Yeah,
actually,
we
really, oh my God. So, one of our best friends, Ben Gilmore, in the music world, he goes by Ben Grace, but he, has had this dream forever of starting a community out in the world for music writers, songwriters, and musicians. And, oh God. What a beautiful soul our friend is, mm-hmm. huh? And like, as he's talked about it, I've always been like, oh yeah, that'd be really cool. But I've pictured a totally different thing. Does that make sense?
Like, yes.
I feel I've lost you over there.
I'm adjusting a little bit because I thought you were going to talk long enough for me to adjust something, but you were trying to
remember,
talk
I
to converse, me.
I converse, not monologue like you. I thought we were sitting here together to have a conversation. You're like, no, we go back and forth doing monologues, and it was your turn to monologue. I'm trying to talk to you, strangely enough. Oh, my God.
This is awesome.
Are you ready to talk to me again?
Yeah, and I realized that even the thing I was trying to tweak isn't going to make a difference for the recording.
Cool.
You wait, guys, so even
Colby
the compression
never stops.
No, wait, it's ever, before the recording.
Ever, ever.
Well, remember when I told you that our sound designer said there was some bleed?
Yeah.
So I was trying to see if I could eliminate some of that bleed.
Totally.
Okay. I don't know if I fixed it or made things worse.
Cool.
Hi, baby. Is there any way we can go back to the thread that you had?
Yes. I was just saying that our friend Ben.
Oh my I was God. Like, Kate will monologue at least for 60 to 90 seconds here. This will be
no,
fine.
No, I'm not you. I'm trying to have a conversation. Oh my God.
You were saying it was pretty anyway. Different than what you expected. And
yes.
Same
like,
here.
He's been talking about this for a really long time, and I've been very excited for him. And I pictured a certain thing. So I think I pictured other things that have existed before, because that's my only touch point is other things that have existed. So he was like describing this thing and I pictured, I don't know, basically an open mic night, your standard open mic night. Mm-hmm. But I should have known better because Ben doesn't do things like any other human on earth. And he had a dream for a new way to do that and for it to be like true community and for people to support each other and rally around each other while they share their gift of song. And I failed to find words to even describe how magical last night was. And I was like, oh, this. He finds little ways to tweak the system to make it so that people truly are showing up to do something together. I didn't know that you could have true community in a bar where people show up to share their songs. Like normally you go and sit and you hear someone perform and you're like, okay, that was nice. Next performance. And I get a little bored,
totally. This,
you know, a bunch of amateur or not, I shouldn't even use the word amateur, but
just
a bunch of people I don't
levels.
Know. That's what, no, that's well, what I meant okay. to say is a bunch Got of people it. I don't know singing their songs. Like I'm like usually checking out after a few. Last night I was just the entire time I was just locked in. Like this is the coolest thing ever. The feeling in the room. So I live for that feeling, you know, like if you go to a restaurant, but it's not just a restaurant, you're at the restaurant and you're like somehow able to connect with everyone else who showed up at the restaurant to eat. So like Rainforest Cafe, for instance, is one of those because there's a thing that happens. Yeah. And so everybody
and it unifies
stops.
Everyone for a moment.
Yes. Yeah. And the Shout House is like that. That's one of our favorite local place or one of my favorite local places. Piano duels where everybody gets really engaged and they're giving their ideas of what songs should be sung and everybody's singing along and it's really engaging. I just live for that experience. Or like the other night when we went to even the Tiki Room the other night with Logan and Erica, that felt like that to me, even though it's just like silly little lights that flash and people order drinks that are lit on fire and everybody stops to go, ooh, you know, that just experience of all being together with strangers and feeling like they're not strangers suddenly. I've never felt that so successfully as I did last night.
Wow.
Because of what Ben has created there. Like, it's just phenomenal. So if you're local, you got to go to the Writers' Round on Monday nights at Park and Rec.
Yeah.
Just freaking beautiful.
Good job, Ben.
Anyway, so much fun. But why were we talking about that?
I was trying to remember, there was a moment last night when something happened or we did something and we had a realization that we were very different about the thing. So I was trying to remember what that was since we just got done talking about how different we were with regards to whether things exist in real life or not.
I don't know. I don't remember last night's. I do remember you being freezing cold and thinking that was just normal and me being like, no, it's not normal. Something's wrong with your circulation.
Yeah.
No, I don't remember.
All right.
But at least we got to talk about our friend Ben's thing. So that's great.
Word.
Why are we here? What are we doing?
Well,
we just spent a long time talking about lots of nothings.
Thought you liked that.
No, I was making a joke about how you said it's not real.
Oh, good joke. Didn't work though, because I'm here. It's happening and I can see it. I hear the tree falling. I'm witnessing.
It's not
I might
real.
Even be pushing the tree over myself. Are we at the point where we should pause to do the groceries? Have you learned anything yet?
All right.
We're all right. Is that what you said?
Even if it all sits out there during our conversation, I think it's okay.
Okay.
It's cold out today too.
Okay.
We're in the middle of a series.
Or at the end. We don't really know.
True.
I mean, I've been calling it the
ongoing
series.
I just meant we're doing
series.
A series.
Yes.
You're right. It might not be the middle. An ongoing series we're that continuing. We have no plan for and we'll talk about for as long as we want to.
That's right. It's our pod.
Quote unquote deconstruction.
Yeah. Like part one was episode 77, part two is episode 82. So
wait, what?
Because the first part we released like a long time ago, and then we released episodes since then of like our live show podcasts. So episodes with like Stephanie Tate
that.
And Richard Beck. So
that's funny.
The way they get numbered
is
just,
totally. Anyway. Heather left your order at the door. Do you want to pause and go put groceries away?
All right. Sweet. Thank you, Heather. We're going to pause. But Pod Fam, you're not going to know
anything.
You won't
feel the pause.
You're just going to be like the elevator. You're just going to be like the any of
no,
severance.
No, no, no.
Oh, my gosh. You're going to
so
wake up.
I'm scared of anyone having that spoiled for them. That
go
show
watch
is
Severance.
Glorious.
Pause this show. Go watch Severance. And then come back. And we'll talk about quote unquote deconstruction. And now for a quick pause in our conversation to tell you about Buy Me a Coffee. And no, friends, this is not an ad where I tell you about what kind of coffee to buy. Although, if you're curious, shoot me an email. I'll let you know.
No, Buy Me a Coffee is a platform that allows you, our pod fam, to show your appreciation and support for the Kate and Colby Show through financial contributions, like directly to us. You can make one-time gifts, sort of like, you know, money in the tip jar, thanking us for the episode, or you can sign on to become monthly supporters and provide recurring donations to the show. This podcast is free for you, the listeners, yay, but it's not free for us, the creators, which is why we've begun to invite you to join us by going to buymeacoffee.com/Kate and Colby. Again, that's buymeacoffee, all one word, .com, you know that part, /Kate and Colby, KateAndColby. And thank you for your belief in our work and for your support of the show. And now, back to the conversation.
The groceries have been secured.
Back. Groceries have been... What do you think the difference is between secured and procured? Groceries have been procured. Because that's a word, right?
It's a word. What, why are what we asking it? What the difference is? I think we've done plenty of talking about nothing.
Good point. Okay. Let's get back to the task at hand. Quote unquote deconstruction. You're right. I don't know why I find those tangents at all appetizing.
I'm still laughing about it's not real. All right. Yeah, quote-unquote deconstruction. We've been talking about it, huh? Our last episode, I think it was our last episode. Forgive me, it's hard to keep track. But our last episode, that was fascinating for me. The one, whichever one it was where we were like, oh my gosh, this is so messy. I just feel like it was making no sense.
Yeah.
Talk about having that cringe after you talk. But it was really good. It was really good for me. I think I did a lot of processing. So, interestingly enough, with what we want to talk about today, I'll say that continuing to stay in church when we've deconstructed, quote unquote, and especially to have the role of pastor, I don't think I thought about until that episode how much that's meant. This feels vulnerable to share. Talk about the cringe after. I don't think I've thought about how much that affects how little I personally get to process. Not that it has to, but it has for me. Meant that. Does that
Being
make sense?
In a position of leadership at our church has yeah, your sayings impacted even, your own personal processing?
Yeah. And I don't even know that it's about being in a leadership role. I'm sure that has its place in it. It's just, it's
You're
like
speaking more to remaining in a church at all.
Yeah, and not just in it, but like in it, right? Yeah. So I guess that's okay. The leadership part is that, yeah, fully. Like, you know, we left, talk about quote unquote left. What did we leave? You know, like we left the evangelical church. We left behind theologies and just kept going.
Yeah.
I just don't feel like we even talk about there was a 6 month time period when we, I was super pregnant, like 8 months pregnant with our youngest kid. You got fired from the last evangelical church we were a part of. Mm-hmm. You got fired. We left. We really left. We left the state we lived in. We went back home to Oregon. And for 6 months, we just lived in a tiny house and neither of us worked. And you call that our licking our wounds. I call it a blur that I don't remember. To me, it was only about, I mean, I had a very different experience because my body gave birth. So it was really just a blur. And it was our fourth child. So it was just a blur of, and we just lost everything we'd ever built and worked for. We had built a house. We'd built community, or at least I thought it was community. I don't think it really was. Anyway, that 6 months did not serve for me as a time to process our deconstructing.
God, no.
And to process really anything, honestly, but definitely not to process our actual theological shifts or our leaving church. There wasn't any processing in that for me at all. And then we jumped. It's interesting. You might think of 6 months as like a really good time. Like if you needed to step away from something for 6 months to process, that'd be a good chunk of time to do it, right?
That's not a bad recommendation.
It's substantial. For yeah. Go take 6 months to think about this thing. But for whatever reasons, maybe it's the kid thing. Maybe it was our youth at the time. We were still pretty freaking young.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was, but we did not. Maybe it was just how hurt we were. There wasn't a processing there. And then we jumped right back in.
And our own marriage hadn't gotten to a point where we could process things like that.
Oh, you're right. That's a huge part of it.
Yeah.
No, you're right. We didn't even talk about things. Mm-mm. Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah. So all of that meant that we didn't really process. And then we just jumped right back into church, and not only church, but leadership. And we did it. And now we're over here in progressive world. Mm-hmm. So we're in deconstruction land. We're like with all the folks who are also doing that. Yeah. And we're free of the theologies that were holding us back and the systems that were holding us back. But we're back in the world of going to church every single Sunday, receiving and serving both communion, and actually even more now, because now we've stepped into the world where you do that every week, which was not our upbringing. And then listening to sermons, and then eventually giving sermons, and just all of the things that it meant to go to church our entire growing up, pre-deconstruction, we were still doing all of those steps, just different, just deconstructing.
Yeah, we rearranged the furniture in our minds, mm-hmm. which is not nothing.
No, it's not.
And some of the practices as a result, you know, were pretty different. You mentioned communion, not just the frequency of it, but the actual practice of, everyone gets to like
be a part of this. What communion even is took a huge shift to where I was like, this is a really beautiful thing. Like, for instance, let's just talk about communion for a second. So you're deconstructing, but you're still going to church every Sunday. That's what we want this episode to be. deconstructing when you stay in church. Because mm-hmm. there's deconstructing where you just leave altogether. Like, I don't go to church anymore. Mm-hmm. Tons of folks do that. It's mm-hmm. beautiful. It wasn't our journey. And so we wanted to process our journey a little bit. Because there's also a lot of folks like us who just kept on going to church.
Yeah, they wanted better theology. Mm-hmm. Like that was maybe...
And better churches and better systems.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But still wanted something, the thing, and even a similar thing, right? And yeah, so let's talk about communion as like an example of what it's like to deconstruct but still do the thing. I remember... when we first started taking communion, I think it would have been Mission Gathering, right? Mm-hmm. Every week. My first thought was, why are we doing this thing? Like it felt, and this is actually a great example because you and I experience and receive these types of things so differently. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was like, and we could jump to the Bible as well, right? Also where you and I experience this differently. We start serving communion and the pastors start saying things like, now your whole life you've been told that you can only do this if you first repent of your sins, and you can only do this if you're this, that, or the other thing. But here at Mission Gathering, it's the table of grace, and it's for all, and it's to be inclusive and to feel connected and one and to remember that we're loved. And I'm like, that's really beautiful. Like, sign on the dotted line, I buy in. What in the frick is the point then in walking up to a table and dipping bread in juice and doing it? So that's my personality and therefore how I perceive and experience that shift.
Yeah.
And that's...
because the practice, if I can jump in there, the practice wasn't just an exclusionary thing, even though it was that. It was also a very particular symbol of a kind of theological thinking for
us. Right. So I used to take communion to remember that Jesus died for my sins.
Yeah.
The take and remember me was mm-hmm. for that. So every time I took communion, there was a really clear point to it. It mm-hmm. was to remember, thank you, Jesus. Like that mm-hmm. was my posture. Thank you, Jesus, for dying for me. I'm taking this to remember that you suffered.
This is my body
that
you bled. Broken for you.
Yes, that you this is my blood died and experienced
poured out for the
all this.
Forgiveness of sins. Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. And then I would even spend that time naming my recent sins and experiencing that forgiveness all over again.
Yeah.
So that was the point. So then to hear a pastor just be like, yeah, it's just to feel connected and one and like, I'm doing that tone on purpose, like that kind of mocking, because that's how I heard it. I kind of heard a wah, 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 like, and therefore started to become really jaded inside this new thing of like, it feels like what progressive Christians do is take all the old stuff we used to do and make up some mumbo jumbo about why now it's meaningful. Sorry, I'm being really honest, though. That's how I experience it. That's my experience.
All I want to say is, where's the lie?
Okay.
But I do, I mean, yes.
And you also have a very different, this is great to talk about with you and I, because that's very much me. And you're laughing now and able to say, where's the lie, which I love, because to be honest, that's not always been the case. I would, when I was first experiencing these things, I would bring them to you and you would get, I think it's fair to say, you would get very offended and defensive, and then we would fight because we were experiencing this new kind of Christianity so very differently. Mm-hmm. I was like, what's the point? Let's just leave Christianity altogether. Mm-hmm. And you were like, no. This thing is grounded and rooted, and I think we've both shifted, where now you can sit here and laugh and say, where's the lie, and heal it. And I also need to admit that I can look and see, oh yeah, right. Like, I've learned there's a whole history of what this was before evangelical Christianity turned it into what I experienced. And so of course there's still meaning and all of that. But anyway, my experience very much in the past has been, and I still can have that, especially with the Bible, have that, like, you're just trying to make it mean something beautiful now. You're still doing, like, a huge way in which I was burned by the Christianity I grew up in was sitting there thinking, dear God, that's mental gymnastics. Like, so much stretching of truths and realities to try to make it mean what you want it to mean. And then I come into progressive Christianity and it feels like almost more so a stretch.
Different kind of gymnastics.
Yeah.
Man, that's so, okay, so that's so fascinating. Here's my initial, and well, beyond that, where's the lie? I wonder, let me throw this out there. I think maybe when people experience such a significant shift in their entire world, and for many of us, that was the case. Like, it wasn't just an inner belief, but it was connected to
my entire life. Yeah.
Yeah. Community, family, sense of identity and belonging and all that. I think it would make sense to me that in our exiting of one and our uncertainty about what the next thing is, that we would long to bring with us at least some semblance of familiarity that, you know, keeps us not floating out in space like the flipping. Yeah. Like, so, but we might not yet have, and this was certainly true for me, not yet have, for instance, a better alternative, different way to think about communion. Like, don't have it yet. Don't have the language, don't have the understanding, don't have the history, not football fields away from a theology around it. Don't have that yet. But what we do have is we have an instinct that whatever this means, it can't mean exclusion, right? With communion, like, this has to be something that everybody can partake in. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, what are we even doing here?
Otherwise, we're so a country
know,
club.
Yeah, so we know that much. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right. Then there's that period, and that early mission gathering period was certainly that, where it's like, we may not have a different way to talk about, think about, or like explain what actually is this bread and cup and why.
But we just want and need the familiarity and the comfort and the structure.
Yes.
Something like, to do and practice.
To get rid of all of it would be too scary for some people. Mm-hmm. Not everybody. Like you said,
which
some people
just... Which makes sense as to why I reacted the way I did, right? Because the ground has been taken out from under me, then I'm like, I extra just want to fly off into space. Yeah. Whereas I get that that's not... A lot of folks are like, crap, there's no ground. Let's root into something.
And we've talked about this a lot over the last decade about how surprising it has been. It's less surprising now because we've seen it so often. And I think we understand it, or are starting to understand it. But in the early years, how surprising it was how many people who identify as queer still had really conservative theology. Mm-hmm. We were like, mm-hmm. hold on a sec. Like, you went through the door of inclusion. Mm-hmm. So,
but cling to like substitutionary yes. atonement
and, yeah. and God as male. And like, so we yeah. were really sort of, the calibration for our internal compasses were really off for a while there, trying to wrap our heads around how someone could be fully mm-hmm. affirming and still holding all these, what we, you know, might think as very sort of backwards and or conservative views. And I just think that that's is another right. manifestation of, I mean, imagine someone who's gone six decades of their life with certain ideas and beliefs. And sure, they might have recently come to see themselves as a fully loved child of God, just as they are, but then letting go of everything else at the same time.
Especially like, if so, you are losing your family, like your yeah. actual family of origin unit. Yeah. To let go of bigger theologies or practices would be really, really hard and scary. And just like, why do you need to, if you don't need to, mm-hmm. right? Some folks need to look at it all, and some just only have a few complaints yeah. also, you know?
Yeah. And to go back to, you know, kind of the overarching theme for this episode, and to your point, because we just went from one church to another, to another, to another, like, and especially at Sojourn, then being the leaders of the thing, we just kept every 7 days doing it mm-hmm. and didn't have or take the time to, like, we talked about building the plane, you know, that was kind of our metaphor for years at Sojourn. Like, we were just building the plane in the air. Like, all right, we're launching this thing. We're doing it every 7 days, and we'll figure out what it looks like and how it works as we go. Yeah. But we were even, you know, quote unquote, deconstructing and reconstructing as we were going too.
Like, 100%.
Let's keep doing this thing we call worship. Let's keep doing it because we've always done it. And as we, like, I look back at like the arc of Sojourn and this thing we call corporate worship, and you can see all these little tweaks along the way. You can see that we were constantly catching up the practices to our sort of elevated idealistic ideas. Like, our heart space was way out in front, is maybe one way to talk about mm-hmm. it. But our you know, the headspace or sort of the rationalization for why we do what we do, it took a while to get there. Like, we sang songs, I think, in that first couple of years that didn't have any qualms about God as he and sinner and blood of Jesus. Even though if you would have asked us, we would have had different sort of theological explanations for it. It didn't yet trickle down into all the different aspects. Like, that took mm-hmm. a while. And I think as people in leadership, I don't know. It was a different experience. I don't know if I'm going to say we were slower to get there because of it, because we were kind of hyper focused on actually just doing something every 7 days. So maybe we didn't have the time to really stop and process it. But I can imagine someone who is going through or went through a kind of deconstruction phase while not being at church might have gotten to some of those conclusions quicker. Mm. Than when you were in it trying to make it every week.
Yeah. I keep just thinking, what a trip that is to do the deconstruction work while still going to church every Sunday, let alone leading church every mm-hmm. Sunday. Just, I have to laugh. I'm thinking about Sojourn, and I'm kind of flipping it, thinking about what it would be like to show up as someone trying out Sojourn and then attending and looking at us. I can imagine that it would seem like you had a different, we've been the pastors of Sojourn the entire time it's existed mm-hmm. for 8 years, but I can imagine it feeling like you had a different pastor in a different church every 6 weeks sometimes, every 6 months sometimes.
I thought you were going to say year, but yeah.
Every
yeah.
year. Well, whatever, right? I mean, I was adding different mm-hmm. increments of time because mm-hmm. it was all different. But we're always going, oh, yeah, not that. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, not that. Mm-hmm. Oh, now this. Oh, let's try this. And mm-hmm. no, not that. Which, God, talk about a shift in how you do things. Like, part of why people go to church to come back to the continuing to do practices and things to ground you while you've lost everything. It's a huge reason why people show up to church even when they've deconstructed. If you are doing that, you're showing up still, even though you've deconstructed, to stay grounded. And then the people leading the thing are constantly pulling the rug out from under you and shifting it and changing it. Then the very thing that you're showing up for, you're actually kind of not getting. I mean, that might be taking it too far. We do have some consistencies. Mm-hmm. We've done communion every week. Yeah. Always. We have this benediction we do every week. Mm-hmm. Always. At least it's our same faces. We always sing songs.
In retrospect, like, but that was really smart of us. Like,
no, it wasn't, because we didn't know we were doing it. Is it smart if you don't know the reason you're doing it?
Yeah, this might be an area that we disagree on. I will take credit for things being smart, whether it was conscious or not.
Nice.
Because I think we were, well, this is a word I might overuse lately, but I think we were driven by instincts. Yeah. And I think intuitively.
No, that makes sense.
We knew
for sure
that we need some things that will be repeatable.
Yeah.
That will be predictable.
For sure.
Because we knew that we were going to change. This is one of the notes I wrote down here is like, we had been telling people from the get-go, listen, not only as your pastor, do I not expect you to believe everything that I believe and think the same way that I do. Like, this is one way that we are trying to actively and intentionally, work against the model of church and pastors that many of us have just lived mm-hmm. our entire lives. So not only am I standing before you and saying, do not believe everything that I believe. If it works for you, great. If it doesn't, cast it aside. Not only that, but listen, I'm not going to be the same a year from now. I'm mm-hmm. going to continue to change and grow. Do not expect me to be the same person a year from now, 2 years from now. So we've tried to almost forewarn our people that you and I are expecting the same kind of transformation and journeying in our own lives that we are anticipating and assuming will happen in the congregation's life as well. I can remember Rob Bell talking about a story of a friend of his, which is way back in Rob's megachurch pastoring days, and a friend of his who their community had just built a big, brand new, beautiful, multi-million-dollar worship center. And Rob tells a story of going and touring it with his friend for the first time. And Rob talks about when he walks into that giant space, like his heart just sunk, because immediately he realized, oh, my friend is now frozen in whatever state he's in right now. Because if he changes, if he grows, if things shift inside of him, this whole thing collapses. Mm. And I like that. At Sojourn, from the beginning, we have tried to give people a heads up. Like, we're going to keep going where this thing takes us, and we don't know where. Meaning, the thing inside of us, the kind of faith that says, "Where's the light? I'm opening up to it. Wherever it is, I'm going to go follow as best as I can." And we're going to be changing and growing. We knew that was going to be true about us. So I look back at the things like you mentioned, benediction that we've said every single Sunday, communion that we've taken every single Sunday, little catchphrases, the sense of predictability that of like, this is who we are. And that's not going to, that part of us now is going to change. But please don't expect us to not change our beliefs on things. Please don't expect us to not.
Ways of doing
the
thing.
Yeah.
Ways of doing church itself. Yeah. Yes, we have always named that. I'm thinking about the fact that, and I have so much compassion and space. What's hitting me as we're talking about this, mm-hmm. as I just repeat that if people are showing up to the thing because the ground has fallen out from under them, they've deconstructed, they're like, oh shit, I don't believe that entire world. You know, the glass crashing, breaking open experience of deconstructing. Mm-hmm. All your views have gone out the window and you're like, what is there? And the reason you show up to church in that space is because you're looking for at least something to hold you. I maintain that Sojourn might feel really, and I can see it. I can see it in our revolving door of people coming in and out of mm-hmm. of attendance, and the response to things. I think Sojourn might feel like I showed up to have something still grounding during this no ground time, and then this thing inherently is a constant ungrounding, a constant wow. pulling the ground out thing. Intentionally naming it, yes, holding that for people. And so it's very both andy for me. I yeah. see what you're saying about that. Is so beautiful that we've named that up front. I think that's super helpful. I think it's gorgeous that we do it. And I can see how one of the only reasons why people still go to church, even when they deconstruct, is to have a ground still. Mm-hmm. And we're like, yeah, but we're not really a church that has a ground.
Grounds are overrated.
Grounds
man.
Are overrated. So then it's like, you've kind of pulled away. What's another reason then to show up to the thing? I'm totally verbally processing. I don't even know if I yeah. agree with what I'm saying as I'm saying it.
Well,
but okay. isn't that interesting?
It's so interesting.
To think about, like, people also show up for people in community,
yeah.
sure, but that's really hard and a thing we haven't figured out how to do in adulthood. So that it doesn't just come easy and go, oh yeah, that's why I go to this thing is to be with people. That's a hard thing to
yeah.
stay in and continue to do. You're like, eh, actually my two friends I have, that's enough. I'm good. Cause yeah. people are hard. Community's hard. So I'm just thinking about, like, why do people continue to go to church even when they've deconstructed or are deconstructing?
You mentioned, you know, Sojourn's rather large back door and that people come and often don't stick around or stick mm-hmm. around for very long or for, you know, whatever. And we've had different ways of articulating that. We've had different sort of reasons that make sense to us. And I really like what you're naming now, which is that. That sense of those who are looking for another ground to stick roots in. And to your point, for very good reason, they're looking for that. Yeah, they might struggle to find that at Sojourn. And as I sit here and think about that, you know, one response to that is that you and I perhaps have come to see the value in a different type of ground and or a different kind of root system. And I don't know how to qualitatively assess that. There might be a version that it's like, actually it's whatever, quote unquote, better to have a more firm ground for people. Maybe. I don't know. I just think it's different. I just think for you and I, we're like, we see, yeah, we value a different kind of ground. We yeah. value a different kind of rooting. And I think what we've observed is that there have been a smaller pocket of people over the last 8 years that have, I think, also seen that as like, oh, that's the kind of grounding I want. That's the kind of roots I want, where it's a little bit more soggy. It's a little bit more wet. It can be uprooted and replanted, and that doesn't bother me, or that doesn't throw me, or that doesn't scare me too much. And then there are others that might, yeah, as you said, need something a little more firm and a little more concrete.
I'm just thinking in general in life, folks, including us, look for and gravitate towards and hang around that which feels secure, has a plan, knows what it is, can say what it is. And for 8 years, we've been saying, I don't know what we are. Literally how we describe who we are is to say, I don't know who we are. And I just think that there's something about that that is so refreshing for people. They step through our doors and they're like, ah, oh, thank God. And then something about the living out of that becomes very triggering consciously or subconsciously. And it shakes too hard and it's rough. It's hard to figure out why you would show up to something if that something is constantly shifting and doesn't have a clear name for what it is. Mm-hmm. Although that's not entirely fair, right? We have like a mission statement, social and emotional and spiritual wholeness and all of those things and core values. But I still think there's something in us that while we might buy into that, A, it's easy to say, well, yeah, you can practice that or get that anywhere. Why do I need to go to church? Like the things that we hang on to that are the model of church. Mm-hmm. A lot of people who are deconstructing, like, I don't want the model of church. Love your mission. Love that you're, that's who you are. But I don't want the, all the other things that come with it, like Bible, Jesus, communion, church structure, model.
Yeah.
Every week coming to a thing.
Here's a question for us. Is it possible that while we might, I said it a minute ago, while we might, you and I might value a different kind of grounding and a different kind of root system, is there another way to look at that where are you and I have some fear around a more firm, stable ground?
100%. I'm so glad you, because I was looking for the opening to flip it. I'm like, I don't know that it's both and. It is not either or. Both are true.
I'm uncomfortable all of a sudden.
No, but it's so true. It's so true. I resist everything that is, I was going to say clear. I don't know how to dig into that more, but yes, absolutely. Like, I don't want to make a commitment that we're this thing, because I also want to be that thing, and I want room and freedom to go over and do that thing. And yeah.
And we don't want to be accused of making lines in the sand or boundaries by which people then feel they can't, like, you know, part of, I think, a firmer ground, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but part of that might look like, here's the things we believe, like real clear, not super old school belief statement, but a kind of belief statement that says, this is who we are.
I want to crawl in the earth and die. No.
And we have, I think for really good reasons, resisted that and been opposed to that.
Yeah. In fact, we made a what we believe page on our website, like other churches, but instead of like doing the thing, we just put things like, we believe that you're a creative person and that you are loved by the universe, and which I love.
Yeah.
I think that is, maybe it's also, I mean, it's all the things, right? But it's also what we've decided is firm or grounding, mm-hmm, or secure. Like, we have definitions of that, that what it comes back to deconstruction, doesn't it? Maybe we haven't deconstructed what it is to have firm beliefs or grounded. Like, when you say progressive beliefs and you're like, well, I believe in, I don't know, and not having all the answers, mm-hmm, people are like, oh, that's food. People feel the way about that, that I did about still doing communion and just saying it just means oneness and grace and we're all here. Yeah. Like, it feels like mental gymnastics or not really being clear. It feels too frustrating to us. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Man, it's a trip to deconstruct and be deconstructing and in church every Sunday and leading church and figuring out how to create a church and what church is. And
doing it with a partner in which we don't believe all the same things. Mm-mm. So like that's to go back to like a more positive, I don't necessarily mean positive and negative here, but to speak another affirming value as to why our ground is a little softer and our roots are a little bit mushier is because you and I know that we couldn't necessarily agree on a firmer foundation in some regards. And we value that. We want to hold space for both of that. Mm-hmm. But I keep sort of circling back to your visitor, your curious person of shows up to sojourn, and after the first few initial breaths of fresh air, they're like, wait, so the two co-pastors like don't agree on this, that, and that thing?
Like, or like, we've received the explicit feedback of, I can't figure out if this is church or not. Mm-hmm. When there's part of that I love. Like, so yesterday I listened to Jennifer, two of my favorite humans on planet Earth, Jennifer Garner and Nadia Boltz-Weber, they got together to do a morning of prayer, and they went through the Lord's Prayer, and they did Nadia's, like, she calls it a remix version of the Lord's Prayer, and they just spent some time in prayer together, and it was so beautiful. And Nadia is a person who, right, has, whether she would use this language or not, deconstructed. She's not that, right? And then is something new. And yet is in that camp of real progressive and real, real Christian, right? Mm-hmm. So she gets on the live stream with Jennifer Garner and she's like saying things so clearly of, I'm part of the Lutheran tradition and I'm Christian, and even called herself a believer of the whole Jesus thing. And there's just this real clear, firm, this is what I'm a part of, while also entirely, like, you can trust Nadia, right? You're not going to feel shamed by Nadia and you're not going to feel excluded by Nadia. And yet there's this real, like, I believe this. I believe this. I'm part of this tradition and I'm rooted and grounded in this thing. To give more, because I feel like we're struggling with this idea, but like we don't have the language. I'm using this example of Nadia to kind of give us a little bit more meat. So there's that. And then there's you and I. We don't claim to be a part of anything. You barely claim to be a part of even Christian and vacillate all the time between that of like Christian. I think right now you currently call yourself a Christian. Yes, you do.
Lowercase c. Soft C.
Back at that again. Sorry, y'all. Inside joke. Just watch the Jay Leno episode, the not real episode of TV.
It's about to be real.
Anyway, there was just this, and always is when I listen to progressive Christian other progressive Christian pastors, there's this real distinction for me between what they're doing and what we've done. And I think it's that. I think we tend to err on the side. And as we noted just a second ago, it might be error, but error on the side of, I don't know, and sometimes this and sometimes that. And real, I don't want to say wishy-washy, because again, because of what you're saying about redefining, but for the sake of saying how it might feel presents wishy-washy. It presents as wishy-washy. It
and probably feels the people in their body in the same way as wishy-washy.
Yeah, especially me. I think you give people a lot more grounding than I do as a leader. Man, this is
which again
fascinating for me.
Many people are drawn to that in you, right?
Yeah, and in Sojourn, yeah.
This, and then many others are not.
Oh,
and
yeah, I have offended and pushed that door we spoke of. I have been the catalyst for people leaving that door more so than anything else probably that has occurred at Sojourn. But
like if we were a restaurant and a consultant came in to help us sort of understand why our restaurant was like a fledgling, sort of barely making it by, they'd walk in and they'd be like, well,
you don't have a menu for starters.
Are you a pizza joint? Are you a burger
and
joint?
And we were like, sometimes. Yeah, I like this metaphor so much. This is helping me.
Do you serve breakfast for dinner?
And we're like, sometimes.
Yeah.
Depends it on the belongs. Day, on the week.
What do you want? It all belongs. And they'd be like, well, okay. So I might have some thoughts as to how you could be a quote unquote more successful.
Why people come here sometimes when they're seeking adventure.
Yeah, I mean, buffets work. Buffets work, so even in the restaurant metaphor, like
true. But even the buffet, we don't say we are. So it's just it's bizarro. I don't know what we're doing with our lives, but most of the time, I like it. It is. It's hard to say. Oh, hitting my microphone. It's hard to say, hey, come with us. We want to start a movement that changes the world and build community that's lasting and life-giving. And we don't really know what the F that is. That's hard to that's hard to do. And and we knew that at the very big talk about instincts at the very beginning. We were like, this is going to be hard to get people to buy in on because of how quote unquote wishy-washy it is. But we believe in it. And we've definitely fought for it to have a space where where it all belongs, where I don't know, but there's this piece in me that's like, clear is kind, right? Brené Brown, clear is kind. And I think we have been We've been clear that that's what we're doing. But we're still being clear about how unclear we are, right? Mm-hmm. We're still being clear about how unsure we are. And that still does feel ungrounding. It still feels untethered.
We could line up 47 people and pick the random number that are like, no, you don't understand. That's why Sojourn is my community, mm-hmm. is because of that.
Yeah.
That's like a real thing. So if you're listening, Pod Fam, and that, like, you find yourself in that, and there's any part of you that's like, oh no, are they going to now suddenly become just a burger joint? No,
because I don't do just burger joint.
Yeah.
I mean, if we do become that.
I just think if nothing else, we're continuing to further understand why our back door.
Thanks for letting us
been,
all process.
It's always been, yeah.
Yeah. But again, what a trip to be deconstructing and going to church every Sunday. So let's talk about some other experiences that happen. Triggers. Can we talk about triggers? Like,
we can. Let me see where we're at time-wise, because maybe we, since this is an ongoing series, do we pause here and do another episode and pick up there?
We're sitting here. Okay. We can decide how long our episodes are.
And we totally can.
Y'all, do you ever get tired of how often Colby and I don't agree?
I don't think they do.
I miss the Whose Team Are You On? That was fun. Talk about things we disagreed on. Do you know how often I hope that you sit in some sort of, this is going to bite me in the ass that I'm saying this, but how often you have an idea and I shoot it down and say, nope, that's dumb. I'm not doing that. And then it ends up being one of the most amazing things ever.
Aww.
Remember on Sunday when I shared that about collective conversation with Sojourn? I was like, told the world. So just so you know, this thing that you all love so much that you think is the best thing ever, just so you know, and that I now basically lead, like I like run collective conversation. And when you first came up with the idea, I was like, this is going to be so dumb. Can't do this. But anyway.
I think like all things, it's a good balance because there's been a number of my ideas that were thrown in the wastebasket that nobody ever knows about, and it's probably for the best.
Probably. It is absolutely for the best.
Sorry, your confidence does not instill confidence in me.
I'm just teasing. Oh, that's my water bottle. Sorry. Okay, no, triggers. Part of what it means to be deconstructing actively and going to church every Sunday or every few Sundays, as folks do at Sojourn. But for us, every Sunday is to experience being triggered. Like, if you're still showing up and doing a thing that talks about spirituality and using bits and pieces of the structure and the format that
the we words.
Had, the words, the songs, all of it. Like, there are folks that show up to Sojo and they're like, oh, just the fact that we're singing any type of worship song together is really freaking triggering for me. And so that right there, I mean, talk about the reasons for the door. That's one of them is sometimes you just can get so triggered. And it happens for us too, as we show up every week to do the thing, to lead people through.
Absolutely.
We're getting triggered while we're triggering people.
Absolutely.
And then having to like figure out how do we hold that we triggered someone and I'm triggered at the same time. So part of what ends up happening in the land of church full of deconstructing people, progressive church, whatever you want to call it, churches like Sojourn, is just a pile of triggered people just bumping into each other and
activated by different things at different times.
Yes. And it's so hard because we are folks who were raised to buy into this weird lie that makes no sense, that we're all the same. We're all exactly the same. We have the same experience in life and we're the same people. And we're supposed to think the same and believe the same and experience the world the same. And then we deconstruct that and then come over to a new way of doing things, bump into each other, and then get real, 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 real frustrated real, real, real fast that we've bumped into each other. Like if I'm triggered by this thing, for instance, then I don't want that thing at Sojo. If it's triggering for me, I don't want it there. And then what I learned real quick, and I'm still having to learn how to move through, but what I learned real quick is just because it's triggering for me, not only is it not triggering for others, but also that very thing that I'm activated by and therefore don't want near me is actually not only not triggering, also healing for other people.
For another one.
Like, for instance, I can give a real tangible example. Do you know how many folks have given me the feedback that Father God and He language is super healing and important for them, that they need that, that they need to have it in a safe space, whether it's because of father wounds or any other reasons or mother wounds, whatever the reason is. There's so many folks for whom they need to sit in a progressive space where they know that they are safe and seen and held and loved and hear Father God. And I used to have no space for that. I was like, no, that's the patriarchy. Smash the patriarchy. And I needed to move away from that. And then you realize, ah, crap, we're going to do this thing together. If we believe in this, it all belongs, smushy ground, don't really know what it is thing, doesn't that mean holding space for the things that other people find healing? That means that I have to bump into my trigger.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, totally. I'm reminded of the little sermon series or series of messages I gave about the strong faith and the weak faith and the complications of those two kinds of individuals bumping up against each other in community and how to freaking navigate that. We talked about in our last episode the way in which if this quote unquote deconstruction is kind of like a dance and people are moving in different directions at different times and different points along the journey and have learned different dance steps. Yeah. You and I as leaders have tried to open up the door to a dance hall where you've got the Macarena, you've got line dancing, you've got limbo, you've got break dancing, like, and they're all,
you and your analogies,
they're all like, yeah, this is a place for us. Like, we all feel drawn to here. There are so many different places along the journey, if there's a linear progression of it, which there isn't, but there's also a kind of trajectory. Also, I think I would say there's a kind of trajectory. So there's people at different points along that trajectory, and then some circling back around because it's cyclical. And yeah, when you talk about the number of times that we have tried to guide and shepherd people through this reality that, hey, the thing that is really hard for you, look to your left and your right. That might be like the thing that they are really craving. Mm-hmm. And is there a way that we could, in community, make choices, try to be okay with our own sense of discomfort and not preference? Can we hold that and be okay with that for the sake of others? And notice I chose those two words, discomfort and lack of preference, because I think there is then a point at which it's beyond that. So for some people, some things are like way too activating and it's just too much. 100%. And when it gets to that point, we can't really ask that we can't really expect of that person to be like, no, you need to like, you need to hold that for the sake of the, like, no. There's a point where it's like, okay, that actually makes a lot of sense and we need to figure that out. And I don't know what that looks like. So it's not just, the answer is not always to say, oh, that triggered you. Well, sit in that trigger
move through it.
Which I'm not saying you're saying people. It's more just us processing in real time as I'm like, I want to choose these words carefully. Yeah. If it's a matter of discomfort or a matter of lack of preference, those might be things that we could reasonably expect to, invite a person to consider for the sake of community being okay experiencing.
For the sake of community, but also there's an individual aspect of if something's uncomfortable, it makes me really vividly remember the old, it makes me activated. There's often an invitation in that to, for my own self. It's not just for the sake of community. There's also an invitation to move through my triggers for my own self, my own well-being. I only know what it's like to deconstruct inside church, as we've said. So I don't know, like, if you put the two experiences side by side, those who deconstruct leave, don't ever come back, and they're just out there in the world without the church thing, the church model, the church whatever. I don't know what that's like. I don't know then how. Yeah, my mind is just kind of being blown right now by even trying to go there or imagine that, because it's so far from my world.
Like, how would they heal from particular kinds of wounds?
Well, I often crave that kind of healing.
Okay.
Like, as you know, I've come to you a million times and been like, I just want to have a season of my life where we just don't do the thing to have some space to heal from that. So again, both and. But then if you do keep doing the thing, there's this real beautiful invitation to heal by doing the thing in a different way or doing the thing in a safe space. We know that when people show up to the same traditional church model, but it's got all the healthy, whole theology to it that they didn't have before, it leads to healing so much that talk about the door. Oftentimes the feedback we get is, I don't need Sojourn anymore because it healed me and I'm good now.
Like,
I've deconstructed the point with you guys that now I'm done and I'm good and I don't need church anymore. Yeah. I'm on my way, which I think is rad. I'm fascinated by that idea of those who didn't ever left church and then stayed gone. They're just two different ways of healing. They're not, one's not better than the other. And I don't know what it's like to do the other one. I have no idea. And I crave it sometimes.
Yeah.
It'd be so great to not be just activated by this thing, to not be, have all this stuff brought up.
You know what we need?
To not talk about it for once as we're sitting here recording a long conversation about it.
You know what we need? And by we, I mean like the larger progressive Christian post-evangelical world. We need itinerant traveling pastors who can come to a church like ours and say, I'm going to take the leadership for a year so that you can not do this thing for a year. Go not do church for a year and then, you know, get the kind of healing that you might need, like take the Sabbath from this, whatever. And like that person, like it's very clear up front. They're not the new pastor. They're just, and like, this is what this person does. They just go from church to church, like giving progressive Christian pastors.
Sounds exhausting.
The chance to kind of get some healing outside of the church.
Yeah.
I think that sounds awesome. Yeah. I'm going to work on that.
Yeah. It made me think about all the different things we deconstruct. We deconstruct the Bible and we deconstruct church and God and all that. Million pieces of shitty theology, gender roles, purity culture, all these things we deconstruct. I was thinking about the role of pastor. I often tell you, I don't think people deconstruct pastor. I think they think they do. Mm-hmm. And by they, I should say we. We think we do, but we don't. Where do you see a lot of time spent on that? You see it only really in criticism. Rightful criticism, constructive criticism, the pointing out of really unhealthy, shitty, abusive pastors. Mm-hmm. But that's just dealing with one extreme. Mm-hmm. Just because we're like, oh, the old model is really abusive, where pastors got away with all kinds of bullshit, where most Christian pastors are having affairs or abusing people or embezzling money or doing some sort of behavior that they shouldn't be doing. That's just, the numbers are disgusting on that. And so the deconstructing world does deal with that.
Yep.
Points that out.
Great.
Awesome. But I don't see anywhere, I've not encountered anywhere where, setting aside the extreme of the abusive part of it, where folks are just deconstructing the entire idea of pastor. I don't think we've done it at Sojo. We just continue to call ourselves pastor. We use the word.
Or deconstruction looks like, oh yeah, women can be pastors, queer people can be pastors.
Oh,
cool. So we've
open up who can do it.
Yeah, we've expanded beyond. It's not just this one narrow.
But so if
that's about as far as oftentimes as we take it. Like, that's what we think. We think we've now successfully deconstructed the idea of pastor.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. So we've addressed abuse, thank God. And we've addressed exclusion, thank God. Mm-hmm. Grateful for both. But you put a female a queer female who's not abusing anybody, who's got great moral character in the role of pastor, I'm saying you still got a problem.
Yep.
And I don't see anybody talking about that.
Yeah.
You agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Damn. Are we allowed to talk about it? Because we are currently pastors. I mean, we're allowed to talk about anything, but...
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk about it carefully. Carefully. Full of care. Like, I can at least say what I mean by that. Like... The fact that we expect certain things from pastors isn't, I don't think it's being deconstructed. You got anything you think we're not deconstructing specifically? Are you scared to talk? Does it feel scary to have this conversation?
It does feel scary, I think, to me.
We don't have to talk about it.
Yeah. I think it would be hard for me to talk in the abstract enough to not feel like we're directly drawing from our
personal experience
in ways that might throw some passive shade, you know, unintentionally, which kind of sucks because like,
I think it's an important needed conversation though.
Yeah. You know, okay. I remember a couple weeks ago, this is a quick tangent, but it's got a point. A couple weeks ago, listening to Glennon's podcast, the episodes where she talked about her relapse into eating disorder. And she said something that I thought was so profound, which was, we have a lot of people who have never experienced eating disorder talk about it as a thing. Then we have other people who are on like the other end of maybe a kind of healing or recovery talk about it. But there's not a lot of people that are like in.
Oh, damn.
In the middle of.
I remember when she said that.
You remember that too?
Oh, I had the same experience. I thought it applied to absolutely fucking everything.
Yes, this is what I'm saying. So
we do that all the time to everybody. Mm-hmm. We don't talk to people who are actively drug addicts. Mm-hmm. We talk to them when they're in recovery. Mm-hmm. And we talk to people who've never had the experience and call themselves experts. Mm-hmm. We even call people experts when they've never experienced it. Oh my gosh,
so
yes.
I feel you and I are, quote unquote, the right people right now. To talk about this, but I don't know. I don't know if the world is ready for it. Like, I don't know if people can handle it, and I don't know how we can do it in a way that would honor our community, both past and present.
Yeah,
and
I have an idea.
We need it. Like, it needs to happen.
So I have an idea about that, and I'm not saying we do it right now.
We disguise our voices.
No.
Okay.
I think we do it the opposite of that. Actually, the exact opposite of that. I think we do it later after we've had time to sit and process. So we're not bleeding on everyone, but I think we do it from a place of I statements. You know how that's like a way to lean into conflict with folks in messy, hard places by making sure that you come at it from I statements and I feel statements. So I think we do it like that. I think we do it from not people still do this with pastor and people still do that with pastor. Mm-hmm. I think we do it from I still do this with pastor in our own experience of what it feels like to be in that role and what we still internalize as we walk around in that role. Mm-hmm. Like, I still feel like I need to, for instance, I still feel like I need to blank. I still feel like I'm expected to blank. I still feel myself fall into the role of blank.
Yeah,
I still show up as blank. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It's not any stories about what anyone else does or thinks or expects. It's what we put on ourselves in that role and experience in that role. I think that might be the way to do it.
I think that's a good idea.
It still feels overwhelming, doesn't it?
Coming in 2024.
I don't know. I still want to deconstruct church too. I feel the same way about church, Bim.
Yeah.
I feel the same way about church. I feel like to come all the way back to where we started, we started going to progressive church right after deconstructing and folks were serving communion. And I had that, what the hell is this for? I shared the other night at our church's little, we did a worship night in a garden and it just felt, oh my God, it was right in North Park, the heart of North Park on 30th. At our friends, St. Luke's Episcopal Church, they have this outdoor garden space and it's just freaking gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Like the whole thing is just this beautiful overgrown garden, like lush garden. And, but right on the street, right? So we've got unhoused folks coming up and we're serving them food and we've got noise all over and people are out doing all manner of things, you know, from thrifting to going out on a date and to skating. And we're just in the community and in the city. And I just was sitting there like, oh my God, I love this version of church so much. And it made me think of the night before. And so I shared at the night before I was at Coomber Crafts Wine up in Oceanside with friends. And it's this noisy bar on the street up against an alleyway. And it's kind of an indoor outdoor. They've got the garage doors, you know, open to air and they're serving wine. And there's a guy making pizza in a brick oven, just right in the middle. And there are these little kids up front doing full on gymnastics right in front of the stage where Karen and Ben Story and Tune are singing, performing. So there's live music and there's friends and there's loud bustle and hustle. And I shared that I kept thinking to myself, this is my church. This is church. This is what church is to me, is this. It's loud, it's busy, there's kids and old people, there's connection and there's song and there's a sense of belonging, even though you don't know everybody there and all the things. And then I kept saying, this is church, and then I kept following that up with what a weird thing to say, what do I mean by that? And then I shared that that led me to answer that question finally for the first time. And to me, it meant like this felt sense of safety in my body of I'm fully alive here. Like just this is what it means to be alive. Remember we used to say with people often, like, this is it. This is, how did we say it? Like, this is what it means.
This is what it's all about.
This is what it's all about. Mm-hmm. This is what it's all about. And you and I still feel that, right? On a Saturday morning, we'll get up with the kids and we'll be drinking coffee and playing games and the fresh air is coming in and we'll look at each other like, this is what it's all about. That is what church is to me. And I'm finally ready to, I don't know, to deconstruct the whole thing. Instead of, like, again, I feel the same exact way about church that I do about pastor, where we deconstructed the abuse and the who can come.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right? Same thing.
Yeah.
We dealt with the abuse, thank God, and the exclusion, thank God.
Here's what's not okay. And here's who now gets to play. But what is it we're playing?
But what is it? And the what is it matters to me as a person who enjoys a lot of things and it's not sitting through sermons. I know we differ on that. You love, but that's why can't we bring in It All Belongs? Like, can't we both and that so that folks get a little bit of everything? I'm ready for that. I'm really ready for that. Our church is this. I like that. Anyway.
Good stuff.
So what I'm saying is that going to church every Sunday while you're deconstructing is real weird and real hard and real messy. And I like it.
Pretty awesome.
And there's things that we haven't deconstructed yet. I think staying,
for sure.
And I think that those two things are connected. I think that the things we haven't deconstructed yet, like pastor and church, are a result of, I don't think that's true for the folks who just left and didn't come back. They're good. They did deconstruct pastor and church.
And or they don't
really
need to.
Well, I think it's one and the same. Yeah. I think it's done and done.
Oh, okay.
It's done deal. But
I just don't think they have I don't think they would articulate necessarily. I just think it.
Sure. But anyway, so
okay.
that's that. And then if you continue to show up to church and have a pastor, that makes it harder. It makes sense that we who have deconstructed and are still going to church every Sunday haven't deconstructed church and pastor, because those are really hard to actively deconstruct. Everything else you can mess with and play with and pull apart and rebuild and tear down and burn. But how do you do that while you're actively looking to a thing?
Or being
to
the
do
thing.
That with, or being the thing. How do I deconstruct pastor while I'm a pastor? That seems really hard, but I'm open to the conversation.
Yeah.
Even though it might make me live in cringe forever.
I see a job for us in retirement in our later years where we go to churches and we, from an outside, like consulting, like we're going to help you deconstruct church and deconstruct pastor.
No, oh, man.
Because your pastor can't do it.
I see a job for you when you're older. That does not sound exciting to me.
That sounds exciting to me.
Exhausting. I want to go garden.
I'm here for it. If you're listening to this and you need consultation, I'll start that job now.
Go for it. That's great. All right. Well, this has been another very messy, quote unquote, deconstructing
conversation. I loved it.
Hey, I got a confession.
If you appreciate the Kate and Colby Show, here are three ways you can show it. One, tell a friend about us. Personal recommendations are still the best way that people find new podcasts. Second, subscribe to the show and leave us a rating and review. Let us know what the show means to you. And finally, support the show financially by going to buymeacoffee.com/Kate and Colby. That's all one word, KateandColby. Every contribution goes directly to this work. Thanks for listening to our Garage Sessions. And don't forget to check out our YouTube page, where you can watch past episodes of our live show, featuring all sorts of amazing special guests, insightful conversations, and general tomfoolery. The Kate and Colby Show is recorded at Holy Living Studios in San Diego and is produced by Josh Gilbert. Until next time, be well. I wanna play with fire. Let me get hurt.